Hello, I'm Virgil Aline. This is number 0518, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0518. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actress-director Gabrielle Stone has a new book out called Eat, Pray, FML, which shares a story ripped from the headlines of her life.
I was married for almost 2 years and found out my husband was having an affair with a 19-year-old for 6 months. I filed for divorce, and a few weeks later, I met a man and we fell madly in love with each other. He convinced me to go on a month-long trip to Italy with him. 48 hours before we were getting on a plane, he told me he needed to go by himself, and I was absolutely devastated, but I had a decision to make, and that was either stay at home and be heartbroken or go travel Europe for a month by myself. I took a backpack and no plans, and when we traveled 7 countries over the span of a month.
Joe Nicky, who owns 2 ice cream trucks in L.A., he doesn't take too kindly to influencers trying to get stuff from him for free. He even put up a sign saying they have to pay double.
People come to the trucks and they ask for free product in exchange for a post on their social media, or we get an email request for an event where they promise us all this exposure from the amount of influencers that are going to be at the party. And I just kind of got fed up with it, and I thought it'd be fun to make a sign that would maybe be a deterrent where people at the truck wouldn't even bother coming up. And it actually worked on my very first day. I don't know that they were influencers. I was working at this kind of hipster market in L.A., and I saw some people walk up and look at it, and they either rolled their eyes or give it a dirty look, and they walked away and left the truck.
Stuart Nauman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nauman, and Book Banter looks at the life and art of the funny man behind Blazing Saddles, The Producers, and the 2,000-year-old man, Mel Brooks. So, may the Schwartz be with you, because it's all happening soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0518, was Virgil Aline, my nephew-in-law, who works at Bombardier. Thank you very much, Virgil, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 56-year-old Terry Hammond was in jail on charges of assault, criminal mischief, and theft. He also had been previously jailed for allegedly stealing an AM radio transmitter when he was the owner and operator of Jasper, Alabama radio station, as well as administrator of the Walker County Area News Facebook page. Now, he's facing additional charges of making a terrorist threat after the Walker County Sheriff's Office discovered a plan to bomb the county courthouse. Said the Sheriff's Office, the plot involved 2 inmates, who had given themselves the code names Pinky and the Brain.
Gee, Brain, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
They're Pinky and the Brain. Yes, Pinky and the Brain. One is a genius, the other's insane. They're laboratory mice. Their genes have been sliced. They're Pinky and the Brain. Brain, 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 brain.
They were working together to create several ANFO, or ammonium nitrate fuel oil bombs. Hammond had allegedly cooked up the plan with fellow inmate 29-year-old Bryant Williams Jr. The plan called for one man to bond out and get the needed supplies and instructions on how to create the devices.
Before each night is done, their plan will be unfurled by the dawning of the sun. They'll take over the world. They're Pinky and the Brain. Yes, Pinky and the Brain. Their twilight campaign is easy to explain. To prove their mousy worth, they'll overthrow the earth. They're Pinky and the Brain. Brain, 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 brain.
Starve! Bond was set at $500,000 cash for both men. Basically, What we have here are two of the dimmest bulbs who aspire to and emulate two even dimmer bulbs.
Pinky, are you pondering what I'm pondering?
I think so, Blaine. But don't you need a swimming pool to play Marco Polo?
No, Pinky. We're trapped. We must find another way out.
Yeah, not exactly Mensa material here. A construction company putting up a new building at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, notified the college that there was a problem with the $200 million project. According to a Dartmouth spokeswoman, the 70-foot-deep foundation hole they dug for the building has been placed 10 feet south of the intended location. Fixing it could run into seven figures, experts say. The project had been halted while officials figure out what to do. And what's the building meant to house once it's finally finished? Glad you asked. The college's engineering school. Wow. If only there was some sort of profession that could figure out how a big project should be done before work starts. If only. What could that profession be? Anyway, a driver in Atwood, Ontario, who allegedly strapped a toddler to a beer case instead of a car seat, was charged with failing to properly secure a child. The 22-year-old driver was pulled over at around 2:30 a.m. Ontario Provincial Police officers say a 2-year-old child was also in the car, sitting on a 30-can case of beer. The Wellington North driver, who was not identified in order to protect the child's privacy, had allegedly put the case on the seat of his car and strapped the child in. In Ontario, any child weighing less than 80 pounds, standing less than 4 feet, 9 inches tall, and under the age of 8, must be secured in some form of booster or child seat. Apparently, the words "some form of booster seat" does not include 30 packs of beer. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it's still a little early to start celebrating Christmas, but try telling that to an Oregon man who allegedly broke into a home, ate a cupcake, and put on the female homeowner's Christmas pajama onesie. 38-year-old Ryan Douglas Bishop also allegedly brought along his feline partner in crime, a cat named Spaghetti, and dressed him in a cat shirt. Cops say Bishop and Spaghetti made themselves feel at home in the Gresham, Oregon property, opting not to leave after the alleged burglary, choosing instead to hide in a crawl space underneath the house. When the homeowners returned on Sunday, they reportedly found damage and belongings that weren't theirs. Perhaps hearing the homeowners and realizing they may have overstayed their welcome, Bishop and Spaghetti were heard moving around in the crawl space by the homeowners. Opening the crawl space door, the homeowners witnessed the shirted Spaghetti coming out first. Certain the cat couldn't be all that was down there, the homeowners then called the police. Authorities arrived and Douglas came out from the crawl space. The female homeowner reportedly told police Douglas was wearing her Christmas onesie. She requested it not be returned. Bishop was arrested and charged with theft, burglary, and criminal mischief. Animal Control was called to handle Spaghetti. You know, search as I may, high and low, for more photographic details of this story, when it comes to the onesies, I couldn't find anywhere any of those who wore it best comparison shots. Yeah, anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Award-winning actress, director Gabrielle Stone is back on the program with us, but she's not here to talk about a film this time. Instead, she's here to talk about her book, a rather personal story called Eat, Pray, FML. She joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Gabrielle.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us once again. It just so happens that on last week's show, your mother, Dee Wallace, was on the program. And of course, like every proud mom, she's talking about her daughter and she's talking about your book. So we had to get in contact with you to hear it from you.
Yes, she should be my agent. She's very proud, and it's been a really crazy couple of weeks in both of our lives because of this book.
Now, this is, I mean, it sounds like a nice title, although we can't explain what FML stands for, but people can guess. But this is a very personal tale for you, isn't it?
It is. It more or less happened to me in 2017. I was married for almost 2 years and found out my husband was having an affair with a 19-year-old for 6 months. I filed for divorce and left. And a few weeks later, I met a man and we fell madly in love with each other. It was a whirlwind romance. And he convinced me to go on a month-long trip to Italy with him. 48 hours before we were getting on a plane, he told me he needed to go by himself. And I was absolutely devastated. But I had a decision to make, and that was either stay at home and be heartbroken or go travel Europe for a month by myself. So I took a backpack and no plans and went and traveled 7 countries over the span of a month by myself.
Wow.
And then I wrote a book about it.
Now, these two experiences you had back to back, did that in any way, shape, or form have an effect on your self-esteem?
Oh, of course. I mean, I was broken at that point and at one of my lowest points, but I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason, and I knew that this trip was going to go make me face a lot of fears head on that I had been carrying with me my whole life, and it really did change me as a person, and I came back a different human in all the best ways.
When we spoke to your mother on last week's program, she told a little synopsis of this story, and she also added to the situation the fact that your father had passed away when you were 7 years old, and she said you had abandonment issues. Would that be accurate?
Oh, hugely. Yeah, hugely. And these two situations with both of these men were ripping those abandonment wounds wide open. And it really made me go find out how to heal myself and figure out how to love myself and do a lot of soul searching. So for people that go and read this book, it's fun and ridiculous and raw and real. And it's really like you're reading a Netflix show in front of your face, but sprinkled throughout all of that is a lot of ways to find out how to heal yourself and love yourself and figure out really what's at your core.
You had the presence of mind to, as you say, go away and backpack and collect your thoughts and find yourself. At what point did you say, not only am I going to find myself, but I'm going to share my story in the form of a book?
I actually knew that I was going to write it the second I found out I was going by myself, because it was kind of just the straw that broke the camel's back of how ridiculous the last few months in my life had been. And I wrote it, the majority of it, I wrote on my trip. I bought a leather-bound journal and started writing the first day I was in London. And I wrote about 3/4 of it on my trip and then finished it when I came home and transferred it into my laptop. But it really, I knew from the beginning. And if you look at the journal next to the physical book that's out now, it's almost the same. I wasn't writing it as a journal. I was writing it as the book in that journal.
Did you put the journal down for any period of time and then come back to it? Or did you, in other words, did you give time to reflect upon the things you had written?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, look, as much as I was writing on my trip, I was also partying and meeting people and making mistakes and doing crazy things. And there was a lot of, you know, me just traveling. But whenever I would take a train ride or I would choose to go to a cafe, I would sit down and I would write. And then when I came back, once I had finished the whole book, you know, there was a year-long edit process, and that time really helped me kind of reflect and settle into what I was writing about.
And which for you was more cathartic, the journey itself or the journaling?
Oh, God, that's a hard question. I think both in very different ways. The book itself was like my therapy for me, and I don't think I would have gotten through all of it without being able to have this piece of art that I was working on. But the trip itself changed me to my core, and that was was what was making me realize all these beliefs and facing these fears and really learning how to love myself and heal myself was the things I was doing on this trip. So I think they go hand in hand. I don't know if I would be able to pick one over the other.
Not that you should be concerned about this in any way, shape, or form, but have you given any thought to how those two guys have thought about this book now that it's out?
Well, I haven't heard from my ex-husband, and while I wish nothing bad on him nor his girlfriend, you know, I'm very thankful for my marriage and what I learned from it, and I'm even more thankful to be out of it now. Being on the other side of it, I'm so much happier, and I'm so thankful because I truly feel like I dodged a huge bullet. But really, to me, the only reason why the divorce stuff is included in the book is to set the stage for how ridiculous the story was and because it was something I was going through. Other than that, it's really, he's just the character in my story now. I'm very disconnected from it. And I wish nothing bad on him, you know. And as far as Javier, the man that dumped me before Europe, he's been very supportive of the book, as has his family. And I'm so thankful for that because I don't think I would have been able to release this without having their blessing. So that was really hugely important to me. And they've been really great in supporting me in that.
You mentioned earlier that this plays out like a Netflix movie. So it begs the question, could it be a Netflix movie?
I think it would fit better as a limited series. There's way too much to pack into one film, but I definitely think it would be awesome as a bingeable 10-episode type series. And it's being pitched around right now, so we'll see if it ends up finding a home somewhere.
Now, again, I bring up your mom, Dee Wallace. She has been in countless movies, and she's always been a nurturing mom. What was it like for her while you were going all through all this? I mean, you know, I'm sure every parent aches for their own child and wants everything to be perfect. You were going through this. How was she helping you?
She actually took it very hard, and she's the strongest person I know, and we're very close and go through everything together. But this was the first thing in my life where she really did not know how to cope. I mean, she took the divorce harder than I did in a lot of ways, I think. And the situation after, she had so much anger towards Javier. And I really was still kind of healing and moving through that and working through things with him. So it was really difficult for her. I mean, as expected, to see your little girl be, you know, betrayed and abandoned and you've lied to and brokenhearted twice in the span of 2 months was a lot for anyone, much less a mom who's as close as her and I are, to deal with, for sure.
So you got this book, and we wish you nothing but great success with this book, and hopefully it will be made into a limited series that we can watch your story unfold. When we first spoke with you was when you were starring in the film Speak No Evil, and then we spoke to you again when you made your directorial debut with the short film It Happened Again last night. So what's been happening since, and what are you working on now?
So I just directed my second directorial film that starred my mom, Dee Wallace, and Amy Smart and Tamor Ghazi. So that's going to festivals right now. And I am in development for a feature film that I'm going to direct, which is based on a best-selling book that I'm really excited to bring to the screen. And I'm still working as an actress. I just finished a film called Await the Dawn with Josh Server that should be out sometime next year. And yeah, all the things based around the book have been really crazy. It's been out for 3 weeks, so that's been kind of taking over my life lately. And it's available exclusively on Amazon in paperback and ebook.
And the movie you just directed that stars your mom is called?
After Emma.
After Emma. What's it like directing your mom?
It was really interesting for both of us. I think it was a proud moment for her to be on such a well-run set that she felt so good about and knowing that it was being run by her daughter. My dad was also the director in our family, so I think there was a lot of pride being able to see that some of that ended up in my blood. And it was fun, but it was honestly, it was like directing any other actress, except that when we weren't working, we were hanging out and having fun.
As I mentioned, again, talking to your mom, you mentioned your dad, Christopher Stone. I was a big fan of his while growing up myself. And as I told your mom, you know, had a bit of a man crush on your dad, too. So I enjoyed his work. I enjoyed your mom's work. I enjoy your work. And Gabrielle, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. I'm sorry to hear what you've went through, but the fact of the matter is you went through it. You didn't stay, and you're making lemonade, as the saying goes.
And the lemonade is so good, I would not give it up for anything.
Thank you for being on the program.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Actress Gabrielle Stone. Her book is Eat, Pray, FML. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0518. And you'll find links to Gabrielle's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the owner of an ice cream truck that doesn't like influencers. We'll also have Stuart Nullman along with another edition of Book Banter. There will be an Idiot of the Day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Let's get back to the stuff. A kindly grandfather who just wanted to treat nurses at Warrington Hospital in Cheshire, England, for the good care given to a relative, unwittingly gave them a red velvet cake laced with cannabis. The man got the cake from his grandson's 18th birthday party and presented it to the staff at the hospital. An unnamed staff member said three or four of the nurses were, quote, off their faces afterward, and another noted how relaxed they all were. Cheshire police destroyed what remained of the cake after the incident. Okay, I'm willing to take this story at face value and assume that Gramps didn't know anything about the contraband, but seriously, just because the grandfather is old and the grandson is 18 is not a reason to assume the obvious just because of age. After all, marijuana wasn't invented this week. It's not like it's the latest app. Is there nobody out there who can't see the possibility that Pop Pop did know what was in the cake? Again, this ain't exactly a new recipe. Also, did he ask to borrow or take the cake from his grandson and the party? I mean, it was for his grandson's party. Did he just swipe the cake? Anyway, still with weed. A Colorado veterinarian says dogs in the Aspen area are being brought in with marijuana toxicity after getting high from eating human poop at trails and campgrounds. Dr. Scott Dalganow, owner of Valley Emergency Pet Care, said between 3 and 10 dogs come in each week with marijuana toxicity, and 70 to 80% of the dogs' owners said they don't know where the pets found cannabis, but they say they were out on a trail or camping. Dalganow said, "I can't believe that the owners are lying." He said the canines could be getting their highs from eating human excrement tainted with THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. Human feces can contain enough of the chemical to get a dog high. Most dogs will eat human feces given the opportunity, Dalganow said. And he said that he personally has seen human feces abandoned next to trails on multiple occasions. weed toxicity in dogs has been on the rise since states began legalizing recreational use, with the Pet Poison Helpline reporting a 448% increase in cases over the past 6 years. Vets say dogs suffering from the condition typically suffer nausea and disorientation. The treatment is to keep the dog calm and hydrated until the THC naturally passes through the canine system. Okay, admittedly, I'm not a pet person. So the line that horrifies me the most in this story is, most dogs will eat human feces given the opportunity. You know, these are animals that are always trying to lick you. Ew! Also, seriously, are you buying the argument the dog owners are all coming up with, that they have no idea of how or where the dog got high in the woods? Really? Okay. Police in Missouri were able to sniff out a suspect they were searching for without the need of a canine unit. The Liberty Police Department was searching for the unnamed suspect, attempting to hide from them when he revealed his location after passing gas loud enough for authorities to hear. Police were searching for the man who had a warrant out for his arrest for possession of a controlled substance. Apparently he couldn't control his own substances. News of the bizarre situation made its way to Missouri's Clay County Sheriff's Department, who took to Twitter to make light of the situation. Here's what they said. If you've got a felony warrant out for your arrest, the cops are looking for you, and you pass gas so loud it gives up your hiding spot, you're definitely having a poop emoji day. Liberty Police responded to the tweet saying, thanks to Sheriff Clay and company for airing out a wanted person's dirty laundry and fanning the flames. The Liberty Police Department was surprised to see this incident slip out, which stinks for the arrestee, they added. Fortunately, no one was injured during his arrest. You know, if you can't control your hiney hiccups while hiding from police, you truly do deserve to be caught. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Ted Richards of Bristol, England, isn't your run-of-the-mill bird lover. He admires parrots so much that he has had his face tattooed with feathers and his eyes colored with tattoo ink, risking blindness. Richards, who goes by the name Ted Parrot Man, also had his ears removed, which has impaired his hearing. Parrots only got little holes anyway, so I had them cut off, he said. I didn't think about the complications, you know, because if you look at negative all the time, you'd never do anything. Yeah, words to live by. Apparently he's not. There's logic for you, huh? Okay, I have to say something here. As I've mentioned on several occasions, I search high and low each week to find stories to bring to you on the Stuff File News. On occasion, while searching for news, I come across an item where I say, gee, I want to know more. And I end up turning a simple news item that I would have just simply read to you into tracking someone down and turning them into a guest for the program. Now, when I came across Ted Parrotman, I thought about trying to reach him for a split second. Just a split second. Then sanity crept back into my brain. Why would I want to give someone who would go as far as endangering his eyesight and his hearing to make himself look like a parrot any more attention than he already has? Besides, how well could he hear me on the line from Bristol, England anyway? You know, with those holes for ears. Wow. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? And as irony would have it, this was actually a story that I came across that I thought would be just a great Stuff File news story, but I wanted to know more, so I turned it into a guest. Joe Nicky and his wife are the folks behind CVT Soft Serve. They have two ice cream trucks in Los Angeles. Now, recently, Joe made the news because he was fed up with social media influencers who were looking to get free ice cream in return for online exposure. His response was to create a sign that said, "Influencers pay double." That's why so many of us love Joe. He's on the line with us right now from L.A. Hi, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program. And for the record, I did not ask you for any ice cream to be on this show. There we go.
That's correct. Yeah.
So you've made a name for yourself on social media by actually refusing the influencers who wanted to get you social media. How ironic is that?
It's very ironic. It's not lost on me. I'm a very appreciative for the exposure in that, of course, it's great for my business. People now know that we exist. They know our name, people that are in Southern California that didn't know about us. But really, it's exciting for me to see how many small businesses both in the U.S. and around the world have been bullied by these people that are looking for free product in exchange for exposure. So it's the bigger issue at hand. I didn't realize. I thought it was an L.A. thing. I had no idea that people around the world are facing it.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere. As a matter of fact, when I first saw the story about you, I posted it on my Facebook page by simply using the words, yes, yes, yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. It definitely has some supporters out there, so it's been good. I'm sure I've made some enemies as well in the influencer community, but it seems based on the feedback that there have been more positive than negative.
Now, when you finally put up the sign a little while ago saying influencers pay double, how often had you been barraged by the influencers until you finally came to this decision?
For years, we've been getting them. People come to the trucks and they ask for free product in exchange for a post on their social media, or we get an email request for an event where they promise us all this exposure from the amount of influencers that are going to be at the party. And I just kind of got fed up with it, and I thought it'd be fun to make a sign that would maybe be a deterrent where people at the truck wouldn't even bother coming up. And it actually worked on my very first day. I don't know that they were influencers. I was working at this kind of hipster market in L.A., and I saw some people walk up and look at it and either roll their eyes or give it a dirty look, and they walked away and left the truck.
Wow.
So it was kind of fun. And then I posted about it on our social media, and I found out after it went viral, this guy Rick, he's a customer of ours, and he posted it on Reddit, and it got voted up to the front page of Reddit, and then kind of the rest just took off from there.
Now, you mentioned this has been happening to you for years. Was there a point when this first started happening that you actually agreed to the idea of giving someone free ice cream for...
I would consider it because I didn't know what it was. And then I looked into it and I was like, well, you're a fashion blogger and you're promoting shirts. Why would I want to give you free products? And then I was like, this doesn't make sense. So I did more research and I found out that a lot of these so-called influencers have bought their followers, they bought their likes, they buy the comments. And you or I could have hundreds of thousands of followers tomorrow just by pushing a button on PayPal. It's crazy.
Mm. Now, let's give a little plug to what you're doing, since you're getting all the attention now, much to the chagrin of the influencers. You have two ice cream trucks, right?
That's correct, yes.
And how long have you been doing this?
We opened in March 2014. The business kind of took off at the beginning. We won Best Food Truck LA pretty early on, and then we decided we're going to do a second truck. And then we contemplated a third truck, but we decided to start wholesaling instead. So now there's some restaurants around L.A., and then we have one on the Queen Mary as well. They're called CVTinis. They're mini other ice cream machines that we've wrapped in to look like the ice cream trucks, and we wholesale our mix to them. So that's kind of our next step right now.
And this was something that was born out of necessity because you're also an actor, and as everyone knows, a lot of times actors have downtimes and need to find some gigs in between acting jobs. So this was something you did as opposed to being the typical waiter or whatever other jobs actors get.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I did all the typical actor day jobs. I was a waiter. I was a messenger. I did all these jobs that weren't paying the bills, very soul-crushing, and I was wanting to start a family with my wife, and I was trying to figure out, you know, how can we make this work? And I thought, you know, if we could start a business that we could grow together, then I could still pursue this thing that would keep us in Los Angeles, and that's what we did.
And you also come to this from knowledge, because your family was in the food business back home, right?
Yeah, my father still is in the business. He's been in the restaurant business my entire life. He has a place in upstate New York in the Albany area, but he does, I hate to use the word banquet hall because it sounds cheesy, but he's lots of private events and weddings, and we took his recipe and found out dairy out here in Los Angeles to make it, and now it's our proprietary mix, so it's been good.
So let's talk a little bit about the influencers and what they were asking for. In some cases, it was more than just simply, give me a $4 cone and I'll take a picture of it.
Yeah, we got more requests online for events, for private parties, than we did face-to-face at first. They're wanting hundreds of servings and hours of our time on a weekend when we could be on the streets selling ice cream in exchange for their favorite word, which is exposure. And it just says exposure doesn't pay the bills. And people think that's moronic, like, you know, that's what advertising is. And I get that. But for us, it was so common. And the people that were supposedly going to give us this exposure were not valid to begin with. So it actually felt a little fraudulent.
Now, there are some real influencers out there. There are some people in the business who make a living and do very well for themselves and are actual influencers. What if one of them now came to you? Would you just send them away? Or
at this point, based on the amount of exposure that this article gave me, I don't think anyone would ever approach me in that community. But if they did, I would just say, you know what, we're really not interested, but thanks anyway, kind of thing. But yeah, no, there are plenty of legitimate influencers out there. I just haven't come across any for my business. Everyone who's approached my business has been a complete scam.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction, it's CVT Soft Serve. What do the CTV stand for? Or CVT, rather.
For chocolate, vanilla, and twist. That's literally all we sell. We do chocolate, vanilla, and twist, and cups and cones. And then we have minimal toppings. We do rainbow sprinkles, chocolate sprinkles, and sea salt. We also do coffee floats and Coke floats, but we try to keep it as basic as possible. We have these 1960 vintage trucks. We had a classic aesthetic. We wanted to have a classic product, the whole kind of classic and simple, keep it simple model.
And you mentioned you've been very successful with your two trucks and the other businesses that you have in doing this with the ice cream. Have you seen a bump in business since you've reached?
That's funny. Yeah, this past week, Tuesdays are our slow days. We're closed on Mondays. Tuesdays are slowest day of the week, and we doubled our business on Tuesday, and then it even went a bit more from there. This story has changed the foot traffic at my truck 100%. But I'm not an idiot. I know that these things will come and go as this news story will. So, I mean, I hope we gain some new people, and maybe they'll like the taste and come back to it because of the ice cream, not because of the story. But, yeah, it's been great for business this week.
And I'm calling you from Montreal, Canada, which, by the way, is not too far from your dad in Albany.
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
But how far afield are you getting inquiries and doing interviews about the story?
I spoke to Dublin this morning. I was on the radio in Dublin this morning, BBC in Australia and London. We're getting messages from Japan, China, Indonesia, Belgium, everywhere. It's been insane.
And in the meantime, what about your acting career? How's that going?
It's mostly, I wish I could tell you more about it, honestly. I do a lot of stage and theater in L.A., and I still audition quite a bit, but the dream job has not clicked yet. Maybe this will open up some doors as far as people knowing who I am a little bit and give me an opportunity, but I just have to take it day to day. I've had too much heartbreak in the last 20 years of pursuing this thing, but I can't give it up, so here I am.
And nor should you, by the way. Like I said, I've seen your IMDb. It's pretty impressive. You've got a lot of good credits out there. You never know, just like this story, how something is going to break.
It's literally, I've been posting about influencers for about two or three years now on my Instagram. I would post their event request emails. I'd black the names out and make jokes about it. This was no different than any other post I've done. So, just for some reason it clicked. It's crazy.
And for those people who are in the L.A. area or who plan to be around the L.A. area, where can they find your trucks?
We post our locations each and every morning on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, which is at CVT Soft Serve, or they can check out our website, which will also direct them to our social channels.
Joe, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. I really appreciate you taking the time, since, as you say, it's getting busier now for you. Good to hear.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
And hopefully you'll be able to keep the influencers at bay. I'm sure they're jealous now.
I would love that. Yeah. Please leave me alone.
Joe Nicky, co-owner along with his wife of two ice cream trucks in LA called CVT Soft Serve. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0518, and you'll find links to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, Stuart Nauman is indeed here with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, sir.
Hiya, Peter. You know, remember, he rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star.
Oh, Stuart.
Yeah.
How many times have we told you over the last 20, 30 years, don't sing?
Well, all right, so my Frankie Lane impersonation is not the greatest. I'm sorry.
Yes, but I get a hint of what you're talking about.
You got it, Peter, because on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to talk about not the man who sang this song or the actor who made the character of Sheriff Bart, but the man who was the mind behind it, Mel Brooks.
Back when there was only one flavor.
Yes. instead of Johnson & Johnson, there was just one Johnson.
Yes.
No and. Yeah, I remember Rock Ridge. What a great place. Yeah, but Mel Brooks, he recently turned 93, and, you know, he could boast generations of fans who knew him and appreciate him for different aspects of his career, like writer for the legendary TV sketch comedy series Your Show of Shows, or half of the comedy duo with Carl Reiner that created the 2,000-year-old man character, the creator of the 1960s spy spoof sitcom Get Smart, director of such classic comedy movies as The Producers, Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, and Spaceballs, or the driving force behind the mega-successful musical version of The Producers, which was a huge hit on Broadway.
Biggest ever.
Oh, yes. 12 Tonys.
Yep.
Can't argue with that. Yet, through his many successes and his many failures, the former Melvin Kaminsky can have... There's this common thread throughout his... You know, life on TV, movies, and the stage. And he had an aching need to be liked by everyone and garner a great deal of attention from friends and colleagues alike, even to the point of obnoxiousness. So Patrick McGilligan, who has written critically acclaimed biographies of legendary Hollywood directors like Alfred Hitchcock and Orson Welles, gives Brooks a multidimensional biographical treatment in his excellent tome, Funny Man, Mel Brooks. So you could say this book is like Mel Brooks with and without the laughter. So because McGilligan offers plenty of behind-the-scenes stories of Mel Brooks, the TV writer, creator, and film director in a chronological approach. However, the main argument that McGilligan offers about what shaped Mel Brooks' psyche on the screen and behind the screen was a kind of Jekyll and Hyde existence, which was defined by his friends and colleagues as two split personalities, which were Nice Mel and Rude Crude Mel. And also, two other aspects of Brooks' personality that was barely public knowledge, but comes out in great detail in this book, was his ability as a shrewd Hollywood businessman who, through his production company Brooks Films, they were behind that terrific biographical treatment of The Elephant Man back in 1980, managed to negotiate thorough, complicated domestic and international distribution deals for his movies that made Brooks quite a wealthy man. And the other aspect is how... Brooks managed to see himself through so many personal and professional setbacks and failures that he became a sort of Hollywood version of Lazarus, in which he rose from the ashes from what could have been a career-ending failure to a major success that was bigger than the previous success that he had.
And he also had a wonderful marriage to Anne Bancroft, which by Hollywood standards was very impressive.
Oh, yes, it certainly was. But his first marriage was anything but as memorable and as loving as the one he had with Anne Bancroft. But you'll find out more in detail when you read the book. But overall, I thought funny man Mel Brooks was a portrait of a human dynamo who wanted to make people laugh, whether it was a impromptu conversation or a talk show appearance. But however, through a lot of this insecurity and a constant needy feeling and a two-faced personality, this book shows that the steps Mel Brooks took to the pinnacle of becoming a comedy legend was indeed no laughing matter.
Yeah. And talent doesn't fall far from the tree either with his son, Max.
Yes, and he's written quite a lot of humor books. Also about zombies.
Yes.
So he's made, zombies. He got quite a career out of that one.
Yep, absolutely. So the book is?
It's called Funny Man Mel Brooks by Patrick McGilligan. It's published by Harper, and it's a princely $50.
And what do you suggest in a similar vein, sir?
Well, if you want to read something else by Patrick McGilligan, and he does very epic biographies, read his book about Alfred Hitchcock. It's called Alfred Hitchcock, A Life in Darkness and Light. So I recommend that. And also, if you could find it in any secondhand bookstore or yard sale, back in the 70s, you remember when they used to have movie paperback tie-in editions of hit movies?
Yes.
Yeah, and you all see them. You see the poster, read the Bantam paperback or something like that. Well, you know what? They for three of Mel Brooks' movies, they were pretty good, actually. And even though I was too young to see a Mel Brooks movie in the theater, they were quite the introduction to his movies. They were very well done. And I recommend, if you can get them in a yard sale or a secondhand bookstore, what have you, get the movie tie-in paperbacks for Blazing Saddles, which was published by Warner Books, Young Frankenstein, and Silent Movie, which were published by Ballantine. Well put together. The novelizations were well written. And for the Silent Movie one, which was packed with photos and was, and the script for Silent Movie, there was even little flip things on the corners of each corner of the book. So you had these little flip things that you could see different, for four different scenes from the movie.
Mm. So again, this week's book is
Funny Man, Mel Brooks by Patrick McGilligan, published by Harper, and it's $50.
And before we go, I just want to mention a moment in passing about a death that took place 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that is someone who wrote a very influential book that caused a lot of storm when it was first written and has since become a classic, Jim Boughton's Ball 4.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the, if you're a baseball fan, it was a must have and a must read. And, for any bookshelf about baseball, Ball 4 had to be on it, because it was the first book that was basically exposed the real world of professional baseball and professional baseball players.
Yes. If anybody out there is a fan of baseball, or even just a glancing fan of baseball, and you've never read Ball 4, find it. Read it.
Yes, and it's gone through five different revised versions. But if you can, get the original version that was published in 1970.
Yeah. Anyway, sir, how can people find you?
Well, you won't find me in the town of Rock Ridge, that's for sure. Or with Igor. But you can find me in the pages of the Montreal Times every Saturday, or online every Friday at www.mtltimes.ca.
And don't forget to read Stewart's stuff in the Montreal Times, because if you don't, you're only going to make Mongo mad.
Oh, yes. But he was just a pawn in the game of life.
Yes. Stewart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The
The Stuff File.
And we're just about at a racetrack here on this edition of The Stuff File program. I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you, and of course, an idiot of the day, so let's get to it. In Shawnee, Oklahoma, 29-year-old Brandon Killian was already in trouble for brutally beating Jarrett Carolina in a June brawl. But as he sat in custody, he told an officer that his face was injured from being socked first during the fight. When the officer left the room to get a camera, Killian, who was already being recorded, punched himself multiple times in the face, strangely using one hand to propel the other fist into his cheek. Now his charges include preparing false evidence, because according to the district attorney, Alan Grubb, lying to the police and creating a false report will not be tolerated. Killian is currently serving time in the Oklahoma County Jail for a separate drug court violation. You know, watching someone on camera beat themselves up is like a lifetime of watching the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's just sad, self-inflicted pain. And by the way, it's tough being in an abusive relationship with yourself. Okay, porn is so readily available, but I'm not going to get on a soapbox and rail against its availability because what people want to do in their own time isn't really any of my business. And for some people, some couples, it can even be helpful or just plain entertaining. Now, my problem with the overavailability of porn is that it can change a person's brain chemistry. Porn triggers the production of chemicals like dopamine, which, over time, can create a literal dependency. It has also been shown to warp a person's views about sex, ruin intimacy, and even blunt feelings of love and affection. And as we hear in this story, it can also kill. I mean, you know you have a problem with porn if you can't stop watching it, even while you're driving. It's even worse if you drive for a living. 47-year-old Tate Ryan Doom, there's a man who's aptly named, of St. Paul, Minnesota, was watching porn on his phone while driving a semi-truck in a construction zone on Interstate 94. While distracted, Doom rear-ended a pickup truck and trailer, causing the trailer to break off and fatally strike a nearby construction worker. During an interview with police, Doom said he was driving 50 miles an hour and he wasn't on his phone at the time of the crash. However, police later learned Doom had downloaded 14 videos from the website Pornhub about 30 minutes before the crash. By reviewing traffic cameras, officials determined that the crash happened at 2:09 p.m. Videos began playing on Doom's phone at 2:07 p.m. Doom is charged with one count of criminal vehicular homicide and one count of criminal vehicular operation causing bodily harm. So basically, his life is doomed. What? Because I was talking porn, you thought I was going to say something else? Oh, his life is that too, but, you know, this is a family show. A driver accidentally slammed on the gas while leaving a New Jersey car wash and plunged into a nearby river. The Hackensack Fire Department shared surveillance camera footage showing the 2002 Mercedes SUV leaving the car wash, abruptly speeding up and plunging over an embankment into the Hackensack River. The department said the driver, a 64-year-old woman, and a passenger, the driver's daughter, were able to exit the vehicle and get back to shore with the help of a bystander. The pair were taken to a local hospital without serious injuries. Unfortunately, there's no rules that say there has to be a guardrail there, the Hackensack fire captain said. That's up to the property owner. But right now, we're lucky that everyone got out. You know, this is just typical, isn't it? Every time you come out of the car wash and your car is bright and shiny, there always seems to be a way that it ends up getting all wet. Yeah. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
Two women brought a fraud case to a Madrid, Spain police station, and they were arrested. They brought the contract the unnamed mother-daughter pair signed with the younger woman's boyfriend and said he broke that contract, it calls for him to kill the mother's former boyfriend for 7,000 euros and then harvest 7 organs from him for sale to recoup money the target had allegedly taken from the family. The would-be assassin claimed to work for Mossad, the CIA, and the Spanish National Intelligence Center, and the contract he provided bore a forged stamp from the latter agency. The contract provided that an anti-terrorist squad would accomplish the killing within 6 months, and that if the victim did not consent to organ donation, established ways would be used to force him. The target was found alive and well. The women may face attempted murder charges, and the so-called spy they hired could be charged with fraud. Okay, I really don't have an opinion one way or the other about the so-called spy hitman they hired, but why? Oh, why? Would this mother-daughter duo think that the appropriate thing to do after they are swindled out of money in a deal for a contract killing is to go to the police to say said contract was broken and thus fraud was committed? One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0518. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0518. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.